This meeting is now being recorded.
Now we can speak.
Yes. Michael, you could repeat, too, who's on the roster for the Jason call on Day August 28th.
August 28th, we have Michael Sessa, Michael Morris, Jeff Elliott, Mei Hung, Sam Allen, and James Whetstone. Anybody else on the call? Okay, and I think Steve and Susan said they had other obligations, could not make it today. So I don't expect them on the call. We have some business, but I need to get Alex on the call, so we need to talk. He's got some, I want to give him an action item, and he hasn't shown up yet, so. What I wanted to do is, as we talked about 2 weeks ago, is trying to fill out the solution part of our document that we're going to submit. And what I wanted to do was to have a one paragraph explanation of each solution. And I think I already have some volunteers. Let me pull up my document here. And I think I was trying to get Alex for the A4L SIF solution, which is quite complicated. And what they do is they add a lot of terms to make it more like an XML schema. So there's a bunch of keywords that aren't part of JSON, but they're added semantics to make XML and JSON compatible or transferable back and forth. There's enough information there to do that. Sam volunteered for Java objects with JaxB annotation as a solution, a short description. I was trying to get David Weber to do content assembly mechanism. I don't know how many of you have seen the CAM editor or used it. CAM is a dialect of, I mean, is implemented in the XML. And it's really an intermediate language that you can use to translate back and forth. And you can generate it through an XML schema, just like you can Java objects. And it also has a translation engine, so to go from CAM to various other formats. So, for example, it'll generate NEME XML from non-NEME schemas and things like that. So, or it can generate JSON. So that's another solution. David is on the other side of the world, and we have been corresponding, and Michael's been corresponding with him as well. And David is willing to give a presentation, but he can't make it at our time. He's 12 hours out of sync with the East Coast. So meeting at noon means meeting at midnight his time. Or meeting, I guess it's 1. It'd be 1 his time, so in the morning. So that will not work for him. So what we're going to do is we're going to have him record a session, and then everybody can play it back. I did not ask him for NEME XML or JSON-LD. Their solution, NEME, standardized things very well. They document things very well. The advantage of that is, of course, you can use stuff that's already done and documented and the tools that NEME provides. So that's another solution. UML mapping, I don't have a volunteer for that, and it may not be worth doing. I didn't get much enthusiasm for that approach, you know, going to another intermediate language. And then I'll take care of what we've done so far, the PESC XSLT and the PEX and the attempts we made to go from a XML schema to a JSON schema using XSLT. And actually, we were pretty close to done. The only thing that we hadn't completed was dealing with some choice structures in XML didn't translate very well, even though there was supposedly a one of and some other structures within the JSON. We couldn't get it to work, so there were still some issues resolved there. So I'll write that up.
So Michael, I'll jump in because you mentioned, I'm not sure if you were going to circle back, but you mentioned Jason LD and David Weber.
Yeah.
I've also reached out to HR Open Standards because they, I think, just issued some specifications in JSON. And I sent you over that email, and you can click and download. I didn't send it to everybody because I wasn't sure if it was applicable to everybody, and I didn't want to bog everybody down, everybody's email down. But if you want to just give it a breeze through and forward that on, we could look at what they've done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's different than Neem, so it's a different approach. But it uses, I mean, Neem, their major purpose for JSON-LD was for namespaces.
Right. No, I was just saying exactly what you said, just separate from Neem, just to see what HR Open Standards is doing, because they also do open source.
Right.
But also, I've also asked Kim, their executive director, if they have someone on staff or within their membership that's an expert on JSON-LD. So I haven't let that thing go, is what I'm saying.
Okay, great. Yeah, so I'll add HRXML. Is that the name of the organization? Right.
It's HR Open Standards.
Oh, Open Standards now, okay. And you think they're using JSON-LD?
I don't think so. I think it's strict JSON, but
okay.
They must be having conversations we are.
Yeah, so we need to see if somebody has been, what their approach is. Yeah.
Right.
So the idea is just to write out these solutions to know, so that everybody knows what we considered. The idea is just a single paragraph with the links to the body of work that people have done on that. So if David Weber writes up a paragraph, then he would have links to CAM and the whole OASIS approach to that. With Jaxby, of course, you'd reference all of the tools are used in, because it's not just Jaxby, it's a whole bunch of other tools for rendering or marshaling the various languages. So that's the one thing, deliverables that I'm asking people to do. Is there anybody else wants to volunteer for any other, are there any other approaches, for example, HR Open Standards or OMG that anybody wants to tackle or is interested in, or other code representations, you know, Python or something that has some form of representation of XML schema or parser that you could generate from a schema? So I don't, but if anybody has an idea that they want to pursue, I'd be happy to add that to the solutions. There's other rules that people are coming up with for also just translating from XML to, there's so many out there, you get bogged down. But if anybody has one that they want to approach, that's good. Anybody get a chance to read the article I sent out from David Weber this morning? He didn't write it, but
I didn't, Michael. I'm sorry.
Yeah, David is a strong advocate of XML, obviously, and he likes to point out the limitations of JSON, and there was an article that talked about some of the limitations in terms of using it in JavaScript. So pretty interesting paper. I mean, I think it certainly wouldn't stop me from doing what we're doing. Okay, so the agenda for today, if you looked at the notes I sent out last week, was really to look at our use cases. And we talked about, Sam was on 2 weeks ago, right, Sam? And we talked about yeah. AgXchange and how, you know, how the JSON would naturally fit into that, since your payload is really independent of I mean, you can be sending any kind of data, right, with that exchange. It really doesn't matter what the format is. So I yeah. listed a few others and just so people would use it at AdExchange, and we talked about they might be also using an intermediate with AdExchange like Parchment. I'll need to get advertisements in here, right? But the other I wanted to talk about how else we may use JSON. And I think one of the obvious ones is, you know, naturally worked with RESTful web services. Do you see people setting up services where they would set up a receiver for transcripts and somebody do a post?
Yeah, that's definitely one of the use cases. And that's one of the ones that we have at Parchment. We have an endpoint for uploading PES transcripts in the JSON format.
Do you have an endpoint for XML? Does it accept both XML and JSON?
That particular endpoint is just JSON,
okay.
But it wouldn't be hard to accept XML also, because again we're relying on the third party for the marshaling. And we're just dealing with objects.
Okay, yeah.
The Tech Center has both implemented. And I think, as most of you know, we're exchanging with Parchment with that endpoint that Sam was just talking about.
So that's actually that's really a peer-to-peer thing. You just agree with your two people want to exchange a transcript. And you're with California Community.
Server. Sorry. Go ahead, Michael.
No, I was just asking James if he was he's with California Community College, right? Do you have that right?
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're exchanging with Parchment.
Right. And so you know, we use I've said this in the I'll just repeat it, is, you know, we use the XML schema, but we basically use the schema through JAXD to format it as JSON. And Parchment does the same, I'm assuming. I mean, they do the reverse,
right?
Of that.
So you could send it to them. Why did you decide to convert it to JSON before you sent it? Or are you just using the object to produce JSON and not ever, you never have a instance document for XML, right? Is that the way it works?
Yeah. There's a couple reasons. I mean, the first reason is that, you know, within the Tech Center, you know, we have a RESTful API that uses, and that RESTful API produces the transcript that comes, you know, basically query the a college's SIS, and we extract the data, and then we basically put it into these domain objects that, you know, they're Java objects, right? We use Java too. And then those are basically JAXP annotated objects, and at that point they can be, you know, they can be serialized as JSON or XML. But since we have a RESTful service that uses JSON, we go ahead and encode it or serialize it to JSON. and that makes sense. So it's never going back to XML or back and forth. It's just going from this domain object into JSON. I don't know how Parchment does it on their end, but I suspect it's probably something similar.
Pretty same.
Yeah, we do it the same way. Some of the code that James is talking about is in the open source network server. And so we're able to accept JSON and translate it into the Java object in the network server. And so that, you know, that just works. And then we're able to take it from that Java object and then process it. So while we have separate endpoints in the core Parchment product, the endpoints for AdExchange are all isolated and contained in the network server. That makes sense.
Now, when you say network server, that's the Parchment network server?
So the open source AdExchange network server, and that's your peer-to-peer client. And, yes, Parchment runs a copy of that in our infrastructure. Well, technically in AWS, but so the idea with the AdExchange system is you have essentially these peer clients, which are the network servers, and they communicate with other peer clients, and that's the peer-to-peer part. And then the lookup for how to communicate, like the address and what endpoints are available, that comes from the directory server, which is a central thing, and that runs, it was hosted by the California Community College Tech Center, but I think PESC has taken that over, and that's going somewhere in the cloud. But the idea is you have one directory for lookup, and then once you have your address and the available endpoints, then you just communicate peer-to-peer. That's that open source network server project.
So it's not a, maybe I'm, so it's not a pure, so with AdExchange, we're talking about a, not a pure web service interface where request response kind of thing. It's actually.
It is. It is. It's called the network server, but it's just a RESTful service.
Okay. But both in, both, there's an endpoint at each endpoint because you need to exchange information, or is it, who requests,
yeah,
who's
so
the requester and who's the response? What's the request and who's doing the request and who's doing the response?
Yeah, so you have two peers that are interested in doing exchanges, and there's documents and acknowledgments, so there's a back and forth set of communication. So it's all RESTful services. It's all JSON. Well, most of it. I mean, there are XML endpoints if you want to publish an XML endpoint. But the idea, like, for instance, if Ventura is sending a transcript to Foothills, Ventura is going to send the JSON transcript to the Foothills endpoint. And then Foothills is going to respond with a acknowledgement, a JSON acknowledgement.
But that acknowledgement is response data to that web service request? I mean,
yeah.
My confusion
it's actually,
is, are there endpoints on both ends?
Yes.
Okay,
yes,
so the request coming from the one college would be just if you were sending a transcript or if you wanted to get a transcript, which way does it go?
Either way, I mean, just pick whatever example you want to talk through. But if you want to send a transcript request, then you look up the transcript request endpoint, you send your transcript request. And then if the request is received successfully, the synchronous response is going to say, okay, it was successful, like a 200. And then asynchronously, you're going to get a acknowledgement, a PESC acknowledgement. And that's more of, the processing was successful. And then you're going to get a transcript back. So the other end is going to look up the transcript endpoint and send a JSON transcript to the JSON transcript endpoint of the other peer.
So the transcript's actually sent as a request, not as a response.
Correct.
Yeah, okay. That could get very confusing.
Yes, definitely.
So I think I got it. I think I got it. Okay, so that, and then if, but the acknowledgement is actually a separate request response.
Yes.
To a different, to a so the, let me make sure I got this right. I probably got it wrong. So I'll use your Ventura Foothills example. So Ventura sends a request. This is just one scenario, right? Because you can push a transcript as well, can't you?
Yeah, exactly.
Because we're just pull one, yeah. Well, let's take the push example, okay, or the pull example. So Ventura sends a transcript request to Foothills. Foothills, do they, in the response, they don't send the transcript, right?
No, it's just a 200.
They send a 200, says, okay, I've got your request. So that, and then
they
will actually send that transcript in a request to Ventura?
A separate request, a separate post to a post to Ventura. Endpoint.
Mm-hmm. And Ventura will just send a 200, but then send a separate acknowledgement over another to another endpoint?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. So the whole idea is you want to prevent holding a connection open. So you want it to be as asynchronous as possible.
So it's asynchronous.
And so the idea, you kind of drop it off, and then that connection can be let go, and that allows the systems to scale better on both ends.
So it's not really stateless. You have to keep a state that I sent a request, and
yeah.
I will receive that later asynchronously.
Okay. Yep.
So there's state information that has to be maintained at the requesting
yes.
part. Now the other one would be the push model. So how would the push work? I mean, if you wanted to.
So the
you said
Foothills would look up.
I have a transcript for you, and this is a case that ACT would have. For example, we have test scores for universities, right?
Mm-hmm.
That the student said, I want to send my test to this university, and therefore, mm-hmm. when the test score is ready, push it out to that university. And so I can see the same thing happen. Transcripts, right? You have the student says, I request, goes in the registrar's office, says, I request sending a transcript to Foothills from Ventura. And then Ventura mm-hmm. would, what would be the order there? It would send it wouldn't send the transcript in the request, right?
So it, with the push model, I guess we can talk about transcripts. Foothill would look up the Ventura endpoint for transcripts, and then it would send the transcript.
Okay. In the request.
In the request. Yep, they would do a
in
post
request.
In the body.
Okay.
And the body would be adjacent transcript.
In the request body. Okay.
And so with ACT, is there a PESC format for tests?
Yeah, there actually
sure.
is.
Okay, so then it would send that. So that would be the document type. So instead of a transcript, it would be
test score reporting.
Whatever the what is it? Test score report?
Test score reporting. Yeah, you could look at the schemas out there.
Okay. So that would be, and the same idea, can be JSON or XML depending on what the endpoint supports.
Okay, so, right. So But it sounds like, are we always sending the main payload in the request as opposed to the response? And most of these scenarios
always.
Okay, that's the key. It's always in the request. And
yeah.
then you get an acknowledgement, and then you get a separate asynchronous acknowledgement that you received
yeah.
properly.
So everything is, even when you're requesting something, you're delivering a request. And the inline response you get is, okay, I got your request. And there's going to be a separate call to deliver what you requested.
Got it. Okay, that's interesting. So What was the thinking behind that? Just so trying to keep the bandwidth. I mean, if somebody requests something and the response has to do a lot of work, right, like pulling the transcript data out of a database, then it could take minutes, right?
Yeah.
You'd have to hold
Holding connection open for minutes is a recipe for disaster. Been there, done that. Would not like to do that again.
Got it. Okay. So I think we have that. I understand that scenario with the ad exchange. And it would work the same even with if you're doing your other web your other web service, right? That's not part of ad exchange.
Yep.
Okay. But it's still a similar, you're using the same principles there.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now what, how do we, right now, is the Speedy server still at is it still run by, who's running the Speedy server now?
National Speedy
The Clearinghouse.
Yeah, National Clearinghouse. Okay, the Clearinghouse. If we wanted to do JSON there, what would that look like? Anybody know the Speedy server very well? Jeff, you're Speedy
server. It's payload agnostic.
Yeah, so we should be able to send JSON.
Right.
So what's the scenario there? Is it the same?
You take a JSON message and drop it on the server and identify who the recipient is, and it would show up in their inbox, and they would download it.
Well, they use FTP or?
SFTP, yeah.
Yeah, SFTP. So that's based on SFTP.
Yeah.
And so you just drop it in a file system, and then the server then is pulling that and picks it up.
You drop it in the file system and identify the routing.
With the routing information, yeah.
Yeah, the routing is not part of the package itself. It's part of when you load the file, you identify the routing separately.
Is the routing have to be in XML?
No. The web interface. So
it's what?
The web interface. Well, there's a couple ways to do it. One, I can do manual, just, you know, go out to the web interface, fill out the information, say here's the file, and it'll route it through manual intervention. Otherwise, it's based upon, don't quote me on this, but I believe it's based upon SFTP routing. So I drop it into an identified recipient's folder, and then they get notified that it's there.
Okay. Now, I was told, I thought I remembered that the Speedy server did some translation. Is that true, or am I wrong?
I do not know on that.
I thought there was some translation with the API.
I don't think so, though. I'm pretty sure it's just moving payloads. It can read an XML header and drop it into the right folder because there is a mechanism for, you know, for it to read the XML package to determine the destination, but.
So based on my work with, they don't do any translation because they don't even look at the transcript itself. They'll just look at the envelope, the routing information, and as far as I remember, they just supported EDI as the, you have this EDI envelope with the routing information, and then inside the EDI would be the EDI transcript. I don't doubt that they support other formats, but I never saw any other format.
Okay. Is that they just put that C data in the, is it, if they have the header, XML header information, they just sort of see data, or is it actually separated differently than that?
I'm speaking out of turn here because I haven't dealt with the Speedy server in a long time, so I would have to go back and look, but I believe EDI may be correct, but it's only.
Yeah. I did a lot of work with them several years ago. Know what's changed. Back when I worked with them, it was predominantly EDI. And like I said, you would used SFTP, like Ben said, and you would drop it off at a member's SFTP endpoint, and then the information about routing would be EDI headers, the envelope.
Oh,
so
the envelope.
What it would do is.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The envelope's EDI. And
so whatever the
I've never seen anything else in terms of a transcript. I've never seen anything else other than EDI through Speedy. But it would basically the Speedy server basically the file and it just looks at the header and then it knows where to send it and where to deliver it.
So the header could be an EDI. It could be an XML.
Well, like I said, I've never seen
XML as a Speedy server, yeah.
No. Yeah, I think Speedy is strictly EDI, and it's either FTP or email.
Okay. So do you see that as something we'd even use? If it's EDI only, I mean, if it's not been adapted for XML, I thought it was supposed to be for XML, but.
No.
Shows you what I know. Okay, so that may not be a use case for us using the Speedy server if it's not accepting. I mean, even though it's agnostic, if you use the user interface, right, you could use it. You could just drop a JSON file down there, and then drop it in the right folder.
Yeah, it's still reading an EDI header, so for routing.
Oh, you still have to put an EDI header around.
I wouldn't know what to do with it. If you didn't have that EDI envelope.
Oh, really?
So you have to create an EDI document with the EDI envelope and then put in the body of that after the, you'd have to put the JSON payload.
Right.
Anybody know, Michael, do you know why Speedy Server never started using XML? Did Michael drop off?
I'm here. That's news to me. I thought it had been using XML.
I don't know. The Speedy server itself is. I'm out there right now looking at stuff, and it's all EDI header stuff. And the Speedy server itself, development hasn't been done on the Speedy server for 15 years, or at least 10 years.
So I guess we can conclude that it's not going to be unless there is a mechanism, it's not going to be a way we're exchanging JSON files.
Well, I guess my question would be too is because I thought and I could be wrong, Jeff and folks, but
yeah.
I thought XML was being, it could be that no one's using XML right now, but for some reason I thought Texas announced, I remember an announcement, I have to go through my files, where they said it was XML ready.
So it would mean they would interpret a particular XML header. Yeah.
But But that's an excellent question. So, I mean, basically you're getting, through the use case, is that, I guess there are two questions that I would have is, does the Speedy service support XML?
Yeah.
Whatever that, and does it, or could it support JSON?
Well, it sounds like it would support JSON if we used a EDI header. But is that a practical use case? Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's from that perspective, it's just a mailbox anyway. But it is reading an EDI header.
So basically what we're saying is there is a footpath from JSON to the Speedy server.
Yeah.
I think that should be a piece that we blow out in the paper, Michael. I think that's, that to me opens a whole, is JSON usable with the Speedy server? Is JSON usable with, whatever?
Right.
I'll ask the question on the Speedy call tomorrow and from folks that are much more familiar with it. But looking at the reports that it generates, it's only the 130, 131, and 146.
Jeff, I don't have those numbers memorized.
EDI, 130 is the transcript, 131 is the acknowledgement, and 146 is a request.
Okay, thank you.
Sorry.
No, I actually had seen those numbers before, so.
Yeah.
And there is one for test score, too, because I remember we used that as there for a basis for a starting point for our schema many years ago. I hate to think how many years ago that was. Okay, interesting. Okay, so that's one. We already talked about the RESTful web service that we use and that we have a model that and I think I got the impression that nobody likes the use case where you'd actually do a request response with one transaction with a RESTful web service to get a transcript. Just because the processing it takes to pull the data out just takes way too long.
I mean, from my perspective, that's not how I would implement something for scale. Somebody else might not have the same scale requirements, so maybe that's fine. But from, the purpose of this meeting, the JSON task force, I don't think it matters. Like, the usage of the JSON, you're going to have different usage scenarios. But if we have, if PESC provides, here's the way to interchange JSON, then if one implementation does it asynchronously, another one does it synchronously, I don't think it really matters.
Right. But they'd be different services, right? I mean, you wouldn't be, unless you'd want to write two different open source implementations, one for what we've done on at Exchange and one for request response.
Isn't that outside the scope of the JSON task force? I mean, that's more
Could
than
be.
Just a JSON standard. That's like
right.
implementation detail.
Well, I guess the reason I'm going through these is just to make sure mm-hmm. that there's no other implications in terms of, what we talked about with the Speedy server is, you got to have a header around it to tell it what to do. And obviously it doesn't read JSON. It may not even read XML. So that has implications for what the package looks like.
True.
But I agree. Yeah, one RESTful web service, the advantage of a single request response is the requester doesn't have to implement the response. A response. They don't have to create a web service. They just have to send a request.
So I don't think it hurts to include that use case. I mean, if you're getting...
No, I don't either.
I was going to say, if you're going down the road of identifying transport and how the JSON is transported, I'd say go ahead and include it.
Yeah. Because that one, you still have to know what the endpoint is to get the transcript, though. It still doesn't obviate the point that you need some kind of directory or some kind of way of knowing without calling everybody and saying, what's your endpoint?
Yeah. Now, the JSON would be the same if it was responded in line versus a separate endpoint.
Yeah, exactly
with
the
a
same.
Separate
yep.
request.
Yep.
Okay.
Well, it's just now, right? But right now, do we define, with the acknowledgments, do we define that in both XML and JSON?
In the EdExchange, those are all JSON.
They are all JSON, okay.
I believe. James, is that correct?
You mean the...
The PESC acknowledgments?
No, they're actually... we've implemented XML at the tech center. They can be on. This is the real answer.
Okay, but as implemented today, they're XML.
Correct. They're XML,
okay.
Yeah.
That I misstated earlier.
Okay. So that
is
an implication.
I think the only one is the transcript. Sorry.
Okay.
I was just going to say, I think the one right now, the only PESC standard that's JSON, implemented as JSON right now, is the transcript.
Well, this is also out of scope, but it's a point that Michael brought up last week, and it's just I guess 2 weeks ago. And the question is, I thought have a short discussion on this, and I agree it's out of scope, but the technology that we're thinking about working with, and how are we thinking about doing this? Would it make sense for PESC to provide a service translation service between JSON, XML, and EDI? I mean, is that something that people would use? Or is, Parchment could do that for, I mean, if you're a Parchment client, then they'll do that for you. If your exchange, all you can do is produce XML, but whoever you want to send it to only takes JSON, they take care of that, right? So is there a need for a translation engine like that says, we guarantee, given the XML schema, that this JSON and the CDI are valid?
I think there would be. I think that would be. I think it would be useful. Yeah, the tech center, we've already implemented stuff like that where you could submit an XML document, or JSON, and it would validate that it's, it's valid. It's against the XML schema. We do some translation, but I guess to answer the question, I think it'd be very useful. I think a lot of, I think it would get use.
So that's a possible product. I'm always concerned, when you're a standards body and you don't provide any tools. That's what I think is neat about this. EdExchange providing the open source endpoints for people to take on and use and build, and it makes it a lot easier to get acceptance than if you just say, here's the standard, go implement it. So,
right.
Okay. Anybody have some idea? I mean, there's other transports, but we talked about it SFTP. I don't think RPC would make any difference, or using message queuing or even email. We already talked about Speedy Server using email and dropping it onto a particular file system based on the email. So, I mean, those don't affect the JSON at all. So I don't think we need to go through those. Are there any other use cases you can think about? How else would, I mean, we could send them an email, I don't see how that has implications for JSON except for security. Is that something we would, security service, I mean, if you're sending a transcript in plain text as a file attachment, that's not good, right?
Right.
So, yeah, if you're sending HTTPS, then, yeah, you got it encrypted, but you sent an email. So that use case, do we need to have some kind of encryption standard, or just use what?
Well, I mean, if
both ends,
are you sure you're going to include that use case?
I don't know.
Okay.
Email?
I'm asking. I wouldn't have email being used to transport transcripts. But I mean, if you were going to do it, then yeah, you'd have to come up with, you'd have to encrypt the payload, the transcript itself, and then maybe have a digital signature, something like that.
Yeah.
So encrypted and then with a digital signature.
Establish those standards.
Yeah.
Right. And for the Speedy Server, if you're doing email, any payload you send requires PGP encryption.
Okay, so they do have a standard encryption.
They do have standard encryption defined.
And how do they handle the keys?
You send them your key.
In a separate transaction or something, or?
Yeah. Yeah, as part of your setup, you generate a key and share that with them.
Okay. Oh, the setup, so they always have the key. So you.
Right. You have to generate public and private keys, and they've got a whole guide on even installing PuTTY, generating keys, configuring it to work with Speedy and everything. So.
Now, did Speedy make that standard? Is that a Speedy standard? I mean, obviously PGP is not a Speedy standard, but I mean how you did the exchange.
Well, Shelby set that all up. Back when the Speedy server was hosted by UT Austin,
right.
It's all of that has pretty much remained static as it went to Clearinghouse to host. But that was all part of how Shelby set it up originally for Texas and Florida, and then it expanded to the Speedy Committee. But the Speedy Committee never actually managed the Speedy server. We have folks on the committee that help people use it, but all of the coding and everything was done by Shelby and his folks at UT Austin.
Oh, okay.
And the only thing the Clearinghouse has done is to ensure, you know, patching is running on a, you know, current version operating system and such, but there's not been any coding changes in several years.
I think, Jeff, that the point is that's just another standard that's outside our scope, because it doesn't matter if it's JSON, XML, EDI, if you have to encrypt something, we need, and we had a group that went into that, right, and set some standards for encryption of XML for where we didn't have a secure link. What was that? Wasn't there a task force, Michael, that dealt with that? And then they morphed into this whole thing with with Internet 2?
Oh, yeah, you're talking about commit, common ID and trust.
Yeah, no, before commit. That team actually morphed into commit, but they were developing some kind of encryption standard for sending XML across the wire.
We never really got into that. No.
We never did. Okay.
No, we had an electronic authentication and authorization task force.
Right, right.
That was studying certain things, and we were working with FSA and the department, and then the department went its own way, and then we formed a relationship with Internet 2, and we started working on commit. And
right.
That became
so we never got that. We never did that. Okay.
Yeah, that became the sole focus of the task force.
Well, most things are sent HTTPS now or SFTP, so we have some encryption standards there that we can use. I don't know if there's any reason to do anything else.
Now, Michael, you're not referring to, we have an old data transport standard out there as well.
Yeah, I guess that does have some encryption, doesn't it?
Yeah, but I don't think.
I don't think it's up. Yeah, I wouldn't want to use that. Okay. But I really appreciate it. It's almost like you guys were educating me today instead of coming up with anything new, but at least I feel that I know a little better what how these things work and what the possible implications are. And I agree that email, I mean, that really would require some other standards be accepted in terms of how we sent things and how we do e-signatures, all that. Are they certificate-based? Or going back to Michael's big thing is, are they blockchain? Are they in the blockchain instead of using a certificate for their authentication? All that stuff. And I don't think that's a little out of our scope. So, but I'll let Michael worry about that. He's going to figure out blockchain by going to Europe, right, Michael?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's they're all waiting for me to figure it out for them.
How we use blockchain, yeah. Well, you can come back and tell us how we should use blockchain to as a tool to certify digital signatures.
Well, don't forget, we have blockchain at the summit. We have Chris Yeagers, who's the CEO of Learning Machine.
Okay.
Coming in to lead a discussion.
Yeah. I think we're going to leave that alone for the rest. You know, we're just going to assume we're sending these things over secure links and that we just worry about JSON and translation between JSON, XML, and EDI. And how we can exchange in any of those formats and any new formats as they come along, which who knows what the next one will be. Okay, that's all I had for today. Anybody else have any questions or any other use cases you'd want to talk about in our last 5 minutes? Well, I feel like I learned a lot. I hope May and some of the others that are not as familiar with these systems as some of you are, that I hope that we picked up some valuable information here and helped us on our way. I appreciate it. Thank you, everyone.
Awesome. Thank you, everybody. And next week we are not meeting because it's the holiday. We'll be meeting the Monday after.
Yep, Labor Day, I think.
Right.
Yep. Perfect.
It's already September.
See you in 2 weeks.
Thanks, awesome, everybody.
See you guys. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Leaving the meeting.
Michael.
Leaving the meeting.
Sam Allen.
Leaving the meeting.